I'm very pleased to report that Dr. Andrew Rowan is joining us on bonus this week for The Flock. And if you haven't listened to his interview yet on the main podcast, I highly encourage you to do it because it will make you feel good, which, you know, not everything we do makes you feel good. And also just make you feel that there is some hope for the future. And speaking of hope for the future, I guess one of the issues which we didn't touch on, Andrew, in the main interview, but which is not the only focus, but one of the kind of the main focus of our hen house's interest is farmed animals. And we talked a lot about fostering relationships with people's companion animals, dogs and other companion animals. Do you think this will move people towards attending to the welfare of farmed animals? Or from what we see too often, they're just treated as totally separate things, as if all these animals have nothing in common. How do you feel about progress in that area? That was 12 questions, but they all sort of go to the same thing.
Well, I was privileged to be invited by Henry Spiro to be one of his scientific advisors. Henry was a New Yorker English teacher who was influenced by Peter Singer and started looking into animal welfare. And so one of the questions he had to answer was, why am I putting my fork into a pig but not into my pet cat? So that was one of his ads that he developed. I've tracked what's been happening in the animal movement now for 40-odd years. And there's been a huge shift and a huge change in sort of looking at animal protection as more seriously. And you can see this happening in the farm animal sector as well. Now, this farm animal sector is huge. But nonetheless, there are really important questions that relate not just to companion animals or farm animals, but to how we live in the world as a whole. And one of the things that a website called Our World in Data, which is an Oxford University data website, one of the things that they keep emphasizing and keep writing about is land use, and talking about how land use is really a challenge for wild animals and for animals and for the environment in general, changing patterns of land use. And they comment on the fact that raising farm animals or animal products to eat is very expensive in terms of land use. And just one eye-opening statistic, so 70% of agricultural land is used to raise farm animals in one way or another, either the crops to feed to farm animals or to raise animals themselves. And yet animal products provide only 18% of total calories and only 37% of total protein. So It's a very inefficient way of producing food for the world. And so one of the things that's happening at the moment in all the debates about how best should we restructure our food system, because in order to feed 8 or 10 billion people, one of the ways to do that is by switching from animal products to vegetable protein and alternative proteins, because it will free up land for wildlife and also free up land for climate change and free up forests for climate change and things of that nature. It's a relatively simple personal act that we can take in terms of improving total sustainability, is by switching our diet to be eating more plant protein and less animal protein. You don't have to give up everything, but you know, it's take baby steps.
No, Andrew, you actually have to give up everything.
I'm just saying, you know, but to get somebody who's, one of the things that's amazing to me is that Germany is increasing its vegan and vegetarian options, because Germany is often regarded as the sort of home of meat consumption. You know, the sausage production in Germany has been huge, but things are changing, and you can see the changes taking place, and you can see the debates taking place at the World Health Organization. Lancet has this EAT group that is recommending eating lower on the food chain and so on. There's significant major establishment groups now sort of arguing that this is where we need to move.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a lot happening, of course. It can't happen soon enough, both because each of the animals matters and because climate is really catching up with us. Do you think, how much of an impact do you think climate change is going to have on our ability to protect animals? Both, it seems to me, all right, I'm perseverating now, but like Smithfield just closed or is talking about closing its factory farms in the West. And I think it's probably almost completely because of water. And it just highlights your point that meat use is just too resource intensive in the face of climate change, because water is another thing that it really uses up. Do you think climate change is going to, or is what just one of those crises that we could take advantage of? Not that it could ever be considered a good thing. It's a dreadful, dreadful thing and will result in the death of many animals. But at the same time, do you think it's a moment where we could talk about shifting people's eating habits more effectively?
As I say, Lancet, you know, is an establishment community that's to conjure with. And the fact that they have now come out and said, eat lower on the food chain, eat plant protein and all the rest of it, the amount of investment money going into plant protein production as an alternative to animal protein production is huge. And the fact that people like Bill Gates and others are investing in these technologies is because they think that these are going to be major money spinners in the future. From my perspective, there's a lot of stuff happening. I'm not sure how much of it is driven by climate change. We still have a fair amount. It's still been tough to get the climate change activists to talk about meat consumption. It's not happening fast, you know. So at the COP in Glasgow, for example, there was very little talking about meat consumption or animal protein consumption and its impact on climate change. Even though it could be, you know, if you shifted your diet, it could be a very quick way of sort of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It's a challenge, and we haven't got that conversation really engaged with the environmental movement yet.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I was interested in you. I'm not sure how developed this campaign is, because I know it's a relatively new organization, but I noticed that one of the campaigns that you listed is called the Feel Better Campaign. I thought it was so interesting, because it was encouraging individual action, like I would assume one of them would be not eating meat, that make people actually feel better. I mean, I think every one of us who's gone vegan recognizes that it's great. Like, why don't people do this? It makes you feel better. But as you pointed out, there just seems to be a lot of debate within the climate movement on the value, you know, like, oh, individual change doesn't matter. We have to have systemic change, as if these two things are not linked in any way whatsoever. And obviously, we do need systemic change. I mean, my changing my diet has very little impact on the world. But why do you think that individual change matters in changing the world when each of us is only one of many billions?
Well, I mean, if we could get 1 billion of those people to change their diets, that would be huge. You know, it's that old story about somebody walking down the beach and throwing starfish back into the sea that have been washed up by the high tide, you know. And somebody else comes over and says, what are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm saving these starfish. And he says, well, there are millions of starfish, you know, you can't save them all. And he says, no, but it matters to this one, you know, as he throws it back into the sea. And we need to start thinking about individual things. So the Feel Better campaign basically came out of a survey that was done in America that asked people what made them feel better. And one of the things that made them feel better was taking action, recycling, you know, changing their personal habits and things of that nature. And so it wasn't so much that they felt healthier. It's just they did something that made them feel better. That's just a little, I guess, feel better is feeling more virtuous in the description. So we thought that this was an interesting collection of terms and decided to make that into our campaign to encourage individuals to make a change to their lives, however small, but make a change and sort of do something that will help build sustainability and help deliver sustainability to the world as a whole. I mean, what's fascinating to me is if you look at the population numbers, the UN Population Division has been making predictions on what the global population is going to peak at. That number's been coming down steadily. It was 12 billion 30 years ago. It's now down closer to 10 billion. But what's really interesting, and this is a group that we've partnered with, there's a group on women's reproductive health in England that we've partnered with. Executive director of that organization gave me some information that was startling. He said, if we could eliminate all unintended births, that's not babies that people want, but unintended births, the world population would peak at a little under 9 billion people. And by 2100, we'd be back to where it is today. At 7.7 billion people, we can maintain a sustainable globe. We'd have to make some changes, of course, but we can manage that. At 11 to 12 billion people, it's a lot tougher. And so the issue here is, why aren't we doing all that we can to bring down that peak population number? If we could reduce the peak population by a billion people, that's 10%. That's a huge impact on the globe. And so that's where we see this as a sort of people, animal, environment. Everything's connected.
Absolutely. Everything. That's really, really powerful work. And there does seem to be the potential for change. And I just wanted to add that the thing I really love about the starfish story, which, you know, I've heard before and many people have heard before, and the thing I love about it is that many people have heard it, that it's not just the guy who was saving that one starfish, it's that he told the other guy, I mean, assuming that this really happened, and then that guy told a few more people, and now you hear it like all the time. So it's not just your individual actions. Every time you go into the supermarket and ask for that vegan specialty, which now is an entire department in your supermarket, you have an impact. So it's not just what you do, it's how you talk about it and how you spread it through the world. And that is how change happens. It's slow, but you can have an impact.
But it does. I mean, so we have basically three pillars in our for Wellbeing International. One is our Global Dog Campaign, which is also a hands-on project. But the other two, one is the Feel Better Campaign, which sort of really emphasizes you can change the world. Individual demand can change the world. As long as you get enough individuals demanding the change.
And it's not just you. It's not just you. It's all of the people who you reach.
That's right. And our other pillar is this global awareness campaign. We have this online repository that you can get free reports, information, and everything else from. It has a book on it that was written. I mean, this is an interesting story. It was written by a consultant for the World Society for Protection of Animals. And it's basically an advocate's handbook. And it has half of it is about advocacy and how do you do advocacy and all the rest of it. And the other half is about the sort of subject matter topics like companion animal issues, farm, lab, and wildlife issues. But the World Society changed its structure, changed its strategic plan, and dropped its membership thing. And that handbook disappeared from its website. But I had downloaded a PDF, an electronic copy of that, and the author spoke to the author, and she got permission for us to load it up into the repository. So it's now available through our Wellbeing Studies, International Studies repository. And anybody can download it and can make use of the material in it. And as I say, it's a 101 primer for advocacy in general. And so it's an excellent resource, and I'm just hoping that more and more people will find it and download it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I knew that there were other resources available, but I wasn't available about that particular one. But I'm sure that some of our listeners will be interested in checking out what's available on that website. Very valuable resources. So thank you so much for sharing them. Thank you for this little extra interview with the flock. Thank you for all you're doing. It's really been great.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure. Always happy to. Maybe one person will change their behavior.
Well, actually, all of our listeners are probably there. But yeah, maybe one person who's listening will go out and talk about it today, because it's not just doing it. It's talking about it.
Thanks very much for having me.